And then please sit back and join me. Let's know that we are open and receptive this morning for truth, the truth that sets us free. On this gorgeous and beautiful summer day, we just take that in and allow every part of our being to be permeated with the warmth and the comfort of spirit. Recognizing that this is our only moment of power, and that right where we are, spirit is, and that we see spirit in everything. There's just no place where spirit is not. Joyful to be together to share and experience this moment. We give thanks in advance, rejoicing in the gladness of today. In gratitude, we release this and we let it be. And together we say, and so it is. So today is our last Sunday to explore our theme, seeing spirit in everything. We've had a very powerful month seeing spirit in a variety of ways. First was by setting our intention to do so. And then it was by getting our big butts out of the way. Get the CD if you're confused by what that might mean. And then last week it was by inviting the voice of our soul to speak to us and speak through us. Today we're going to wrap this theme up by seeing the power in sacred agreements. Emma Curtis Hopkins has some very powerful, direct, and clear ideas that she thinks about this or says about this and certainly has written about this. Who's read any of her works, Emma Curtis Hopkins? Well, Emma Curtis Hopkins wrote a book called Scientific Christian Mental Practice, also wrote another book called High Mysticism. She lived in the late 1800s, was a student of a Christian Science founder, Mary Baker Eddy. She was actually called the teacher of teachers. She taught the Fillmores, Ernest Holmes, Emily Cady, and many, many, many more people. So for her time, she was this genius teacher. When she was 15 years old, she entered the Woodstock Academy in Connecticut as a student. But because they found her genius so amazing, she was actually given a place on the faculty as a teacher. Now, she gave Ernest Holmes and many other metaphysicians this ladder to take them to levels that were higher in consciousness than they had been to that point. And she taught them how to be in the world but not of it. And she also taught them how to see spirit in everything. This morning, I want to share some of her words, some of her ideas from her book, Scientific Christian Mental Practice. And listen to these words by this great teacher. She said, "We have unlimited power. If we do not use that power, it doesn't alter the fact that it is our inheritance. We have unlimited wisdom. If we don't draw upon it, that does not alter the fact of its being ours." Let me go a little bit further. We also have unlimited light. If we don't shine it, it certainly doesn't mean that the bulbs burned out. We also have unlimited health. If we don't experience it, it doesn't alter the fact that it is ours and that we have it. We have unlimited joy, unlimited abundance, peace, balance, and harmony. If we do not express these things, it still doesn't alter the fact that they are our truth, and certainly our divine birthright. It has been said that it's our job to be contagions for God so that people feel our light, so that they say, "I want what she's having." Why we don't experience, express, and shine and emanate contagions for power and wisdom and light and health and joy and abundance and peace and balance and harmony, according to Emma Curtis Hopkins, she says the answer is plain and simple. That between you and your power, your wisdom, your light, your health, your joy, your abundance, your peace, your balance, and harmony, all of which belong to you, all of which you ought to experience, between that is your idea of the absence of them. We have direct connection to the divine. We have all of the qualities that I just spoke of. The idea that you don't think or perhaps don't believe that you have all of these qualities still does not make it so. When we let go of those lower vibrational thoughts, those thoughts that say, I'm not enough, or there is not enough, your spirits actually drift in and upward to a much deeper vibration. You identify more with spirit, seeing the invisible side of life, and less with form or the material world. And then we have a backdrop, and this backdrop creates a profound promise that you have made with spirit, and then that becomes your experience, even if you don't realize you have actually made this promise. It's so plain and so simple that perhaps I should say it again. Between you and your power and your wisdom and your light and your health and your joy and your abundance and your peace and your balance and harmony, all of which belong to you, all of which you ought to experience, is simply your idea of the absence of them. Do you want to let go of the idea of the absence of them? Yes, of course you do. Well, then, this morning we're going to get to work, and I'm going to give you about four things that you could actually do this morning. First, you could make statements of spiritual truth, statements that are about principle. Second, you could begin to reject whatever contradicts those particular propositions, and this is really getting your butt out of the way. And then third, it's to rally every idea that you can think of that confirms these spiritual principles and spiritual truths that you know. And in a moment, I'll get to the fourth thing. But I want to make these first three things real. So let's take an example. Let's say that you are faced with a decision. And you're really, really struggling with this decision. You just don't know what to do. And at some level, knowing what to do seems to have passed you by. You seem to be waiting for divine wisdom or something to guide you. Does this apply to anyone this morning? A couple of us. Then please consider this a personal gift to you. So some of the things that you could do is you could make some statements of truth. For instance, I rely on the perfect power within me. All good is all God. The right and perfect answers come through me at the right and perfect time. The wisdom of God is always guiding me. I could release and let go and then remember that something within me does know and that this decision is already made from a foundation of certainty. You could choose whatever affirmative statement you wanted to say. And then what might happen next in our minds? The first thing that might happen is to the mind to come forth and to negate just about every truth that we've just said. Reject the idea of it and put a but there instead. And then the opportunity that you have to do is instead of the word but, you use the word and then you follow that by an affirmative statement or the opposite of whatever negativity the mind is attempting to throw to you. And then third, rally every idea that you can think of that actually supports these spiritual truths that you identified with a moment ago, and then stand firm on that truth. Now, the fourth step is faith. And the faith I'm talking about is what speaks to our relationship to the principles or the spiritual truths that we speak, that we say we believe. Oftentimes we say them, we might think that we believe them, but we really don't believe them at a very deep level. And that is why when the mind decides to argue with us, we many times let the mind win. Now, Jesus did not say, according to thy denial or according to thy affirmation, be it done unto thee. He said, according to thy faith, be it done unto thee. According to thy faith. When we apply the power of our word and faith together, it's like having taken an inner vow of the utmost confidence in and between spirit and ourselves. You could do these first three steps until the cows come home. But if you don't have the faith, then you won't be able to use your power. You won't be able to draw upon your wisdom. You won't be able to shine your light or express your health, your joy, your abundance, your peace, your balance, and your harmony. So faith is like the glue that sticks everything together. You know, Neville teaches that we have to assume the positive consciousness of the thing that we desire, that we have to know it, we have to feel it. And most of all, we must believe that I am already that, whatever that desire is. He tells us we are to lose ourselves in our desire, to lose ourselves so much in it that we actually become one with it. We embody it, we are it, and we feel it in the present time, in now time. The importance of having a desire, the importance of manifesting and demonstrating, all lies in how much faith you have, how much trust you actually have in your own word that you're speaking. Do you really believe there's a power within you that's greater than you are? And that's the power that we allow to go forth and sometimes do our bidding for us. We're to lose ourselves in our desire. That means we have to know what we want, doesn't it? It means I have to know what this desire is in order to embody it, in order to be it, to feel it, and to be that consciousness of it now. But what oftentimes happens, what I've observed, is yes, we get all fired up. We may go to a class, we come to a Sunday service, we might even go to a seminar, and we get very, very clear about who we are, very clear and about who we are not, and we let go of those ideas that tell us who we are not. And then in a few days, the faith in those ideas begin to dwindle. And we begin to find ourselves back where we started. Not so much faith, not so much trust, not so much belief, again looking into the material world of form and hoping and wishing that it will do something. That if we huff and puff long enough, it will move or something will take place. People often have memorized all the promised passages of the Bible, could quote Ernest Holmes or the textbook. But then when trouble strikes, we seem to have difficulty in maintaining that confidence and faith in the ideas of the absolute truth that we have just stated. However, by just once, just one time, holding on to them when you are in trouble gives you a good start in faith. Faith is an interesting thing. It isn't something that comes and presents itself to your front door It isn't something that knocks and says, "Hi, here I am. Here's that faith you've always been looking for." It waits for you to employ it. It waits for you to have faith so that you can then have more faith. In my experience, the faith doesn't come first. We have to have some belief that there is some power working, and then we have to more or less ignite this faith within ourselves. And sometimes it's in the face of no evidence at all. Ain't nothing happening out here in the material world. And we're told, have faith. Have faith, not in what you see, but in what is unseen, yet to be seen. Holding on to this great principle of truth while you're in trouble will also invigorate your own character. And it will build strength, and it will build character. What stands between you and your good? Your belief in the absence of it. What brings you and your good together? Your belief in the presence of it. Nowhere did it say, you're going to see it first. Have no fear. I'm going to just show you this big bag of good, and then you're going to have faith. No, it says, what brings you and your good together is your belief in the presence of it. Before I see it. Now, we often say we have faith in, of, and as God, and certainly in love and the law. And thus we have faith in the good that's creating the life conditions that appear to be right for us. No matter how much chaos there seemed to be operating against us. We know that God is life. Thus, we are to have confidence in life as the outcome. We know that life will always win. We know that it is eternal. But we must stay firm on this point. I don't think it's any problem about what it is we know. It's what it is we feel, what it is we embody, and what it is we actually do when things go bump in the night. Where do we reach then? Outside, or do we reach inside? What happens when there is an appearance, when there is a challenge? What happens when there is trouble? Do we remember this principle? Why should what seems to be challenges baffle you and fill your mind, if the truth is God, and you have that truth in your possession and in your understanding? Do you suppose to the degree that you bail out on your belief and faith is to the degree that perhaps you see or don't see evidence or manifestation or demonstration? See, if I continue to keep taking a step backward after I've taken two forward, and I take, guess where I am? I'm going to continue to go backward. So once we stay firm in the truth, the suggestion is to stay there and maintain it. Oh, I know. The appearance is still there. I get it. I know the boo-boo hasn't gone away yet. I know the $1 million hasn't dropped through the ceiling yet. We get that. But the opportunity is, how deep is my belief? How deep is my faith? How far will I allow it to go before I give up? One of the wonderful things about this teaching is that you don't need to force your will on a situation. You must only tell the truth about God. And Ernest Holmes said, a truth known is instantly manifested. However, if we feel confidence that all will come out right, and just because a little appearance for the better shows up, and then our heart sinks the next moment because a bad appearance sets in, then we're unstable. Then we're saying, oh, you see, the things outside of me run my life. That's who I give power to the appearances, the circumstances, the condition, the people, the places, and the things. And that is what makes me feel stable or unstable. But you see, then we will be unstable all the time. We are judging by appearances, which Jesus counseled us against, and Jacob said to his son, ah, unstable as water, thou shalt not excel. If we can come back and be determined that God is all, or spirit is all, or the power within us is all, and God is all good, then why would we allow ourselves to empower the conditions? We could honestly say, if that's true, that God is all and good is all and the two are the same. Then could we honestly say God is enough? Could we agree that God is enough? It's infinite, it's all-knowing, it's everywhere. So God being in me and God being in you and God being in everything, then could we say that we are all enough? That you're enough, I'm enough, and that everything is enough? Could we say that? We could say that, couldn't we? We could even allow ourselves to believe that and to feel it, certainly in the moment a condition arises. Because then I wouldn't think that the condition or the circumstances were bigger than me. I could say, I am enough. And then I could even go further and say, wow, what a consciousness of abundance I must have, because look at all these abundant circumstances and conditions and appearances that I get to look at. So the more that comes our way without judgment just proves to us the bigger we are. Again, where is the determination? You know, in all great lives that I've read about, we see all the time what happened when some storm of adversity struck them. Nehemiah never flinched when they told him that if he stayed outside the temple, he'd be slain. When they threatened him, he arose and he said, "Should such a man as I flee? I will not go in." Paul sang praises to God in prison. Silas joined him, and a great earthquake shook the foundation of the prison at the sound of their singing. Buddha, Moses, Jesus, Martin Luther King, they all stood firm in their faith. Did they have faith in the appearances that they saw? Did they have faith in the opposition that they saw? No. They had faith in their vision. They had faith in their own determination. This was very plain to see when Jesus said one grain of faith would move a mountain. One grain of faith would move a mountain. But how do we build our faith? How do we really embody this fourth idea this morning, faith? The thing that brings it all together. I want to share a practice that Emma Curtis Hopkins did with some variation of the wording and a little different idea. If you wondered why today's talk was the power in sacred agreements. Make a sacred agreement with yourself. Make a promise, like a spiritual promise, with the God of your own being, whatever that is to you, and step aside. realizing that your job is really to just to continually surrender to a power greater than we are. And it's up to the universe, the infinite God, to do the rest. That's probably one of the most important things that we could remember about faith. We don't need to meddle in everything. Emerson said, get your bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. They're trying to get through, but you are in the way. There's all kinds of statements about this over and over in the Bible. I wrote a few of them down. This is not your battle to fight. It's the Father within that doeth the work. Give all your worries and cares to God, for he cares about what happens to you. I will never fail you, never forsake you. I will guide you along the best pathway for your life. I will advise you, and I will watch over you. Now, the promise has been made. Now, we are to make some sort of a sacred agreement with the Spirit that dwells within us, by which Spirit is to do all things, and we do nothing ourselves. But we make a sacred agreement with Spirit to do all things, and then we vow to do nothing and to trust it entirely. That's big, isn't it? Yeah, because your mind wants to meddle. You want to get in there and do stuff. But here's how a sacred agreement could go. I believe in the power of this sacred agreement with the God of my being. And I recognize myself to be that which I desire. I am conscious of being that now. I will do nothing to make this happen, for I am, and it is now. I release this with absolute faith to the action of divine love and infinite intelligence. I know your minds are going crazy about doing nothing. To do nothing does not mean to sit and twiddle our thumbs. It means to do nothing to coerce, to force, to manipulate, or to will it to happen. Coerce, force, manipulate, or will it to happen. It also means something that might be challenging. It means not to worry it into being either. How many of you worry? Well, that's nice, only a couple of you. What are the rest of you doing? Well, we're worrying. What are you doing? You're treating for us, knowing the truth, of course. So whatever it is you do that might separate you from this, it's to keep recognizing that you have to renew this more or less agreement. Not worry about it, but to release it, to surrender to it, to let it go, and your job is to become it, to create that consciousness of it already, because if you have the idea, you already are it anyway. You're just pretending that you're not. And then your human mind wants you to think that there's stuff that you have to do. But it means that we are going to faithfully rest in the power and love and intelligence. And yes, of course, we will take whatever steps are in front of us when they are put in front of us. Here's an interesting thing about the law of manifestation. It never needs to be coerced. It doesn't need to be manipulated. And one thing for sure, it cannot ever be forced. The law of manifestation knows exactly what to do. It simply asks you to let go. Have you heard that expression? Let go, let God? Or do you say, hold on, Let's shift it to let go, let God. That little three-letter word, let, can sometimes be very challenging, can't it? Let it be. Somebody once said, what you let be will let you be. What you let be will let you be. Makes sense, doesn't it? If you let something be, you've released it, you've let it be, then it'll also let you be, because it's no longer a part of your consciousness. So the considerations, the worry, the concern, the doubt, and all of that are useless. They are simply injecting or infusing your idea with something that's in direct opposition to it. So the more you inject worry, the more you inject doubt and concern, the more unstable it becomes. So sometimes making this sacred agreement makes you sit down with a pen and a piece of paper and really write out what that is to you. I encourage you to go home this afternoon or at some time this evening to sit down in meditation and to write out a sacred agreement for your life or for a maybe specific or particular aspect of your life, so that you actually see in writing this agreement that you've made, that you are going to surrender, that you're not going to meddle with it, no coercing, no manipulating, no trying to willfully make it happen. And the only way we'll ever know that this stuff works is if we begin to practice it and watch it work. It isn't enough just to say, oh, yes, yes, I know that that works. You want to write it down. You want to do it, and you want to watch it work. You want to take something in life and really let it have a life of its own. If something is put in front of you, you're intelligent enough to know what to do and what steps to take. But when it is not, let it be, and let this process take care of itself. Our final word this morning is out of our class book, Your Faith is Your Fortune, which is by Neville. And here's some more great words of wisdom. You have never expressed anything that you were not aware of being, and you never will. Assume the consciousness of that which you desire to express. Claim it until it becomes a natural manifestation. Feel it and live within the feeling until it becomes your nature. Claim yourself to be your ideal, not as something that you will be in time, as that which you are in the immediate present. Do this, and your present world of limitations will disintegrate. As you claim, your new claim will be rise like the phoenix from its ashes. Your present world of limitations will disintegrate as your new claim rises like the phoenix from its ashes. Thank you. God bless, and thank you for being such a blessing. This was a lot, so you might want to go online later, listen to this on CD or perhaps on the podcast, or probably next week you could purchase the CD so that you'll really get an understanding of this sacred agreement. Sit back, take a couple of deep breaths. We just feel the love, feel the peace, the harmony, the beauty, the truth, and the power. And we allow it to come forth, to do our thinking for us, to guide us, to always direct us, our thoughts, our feelings, our actions. To know this morning that we have surrendered, that we have made a sacred agreement with the God of our being, to step aside And let this power come forth and let it do its perfect work. For us to trust and have faith in this principle and in the truth. No matter what the appearance or the condition might be, our faith is even stronger as a result of it. That we trust even deeper all that we cannot see, but our faith in the invisible and unseen side of life. For as the rain cometh down from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth in bud, that it may give seed to the sower, and bread to the eater. So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth, shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it, and so it is.